Good morning, everyone. We're continuing our series of Shiurim on Hetzer Mechira. We gave an introduction last week, and today we're going to speak about the whole historical development of the Hetzer Mechira. In year 1885, there was a settlement in near Ekron. I don't know if anyone of you know Kiryat Ekron. It's near Rehovot, near the area of Tzomet Bilu, a bit down south. There was a settlement there settled by Frum Haredi Yidden who were growing vines, and they had serious financial problems. They were not able to actually run the business properly. They were collapsing financially. They didn't know what to do. They sent a letter to Baron Rothschild, who lived in that time in France. He was one of the richest people in the world and one of the richest Jews. Baron Rothschild was a traditional person. He wasn't Frum. And he agreed to help them because he appreciated very much the settlement of Eretz Yisrael. The person who pushed him mostly to help the Israeli settlement was Rabbi Moshe Montefiore. Rabbi Moshe Montefiore was also a very prominent and wealthy Jew, a Haredi Jew who loved Eretz Yisrael and who tried to persuade everyone that he could to help the settlement of Eretz Yisrael. Now, Baron Rothschild, even though he was willing to help the settlement, was obviously a shrewd businessman, and he didn't just give money and say to them, do whatever you want. It doesn't work that way with very rich barons. What did he do? He said to them, no problem. From now on, it's my business. I'm running it. And you're going to be working under me. You're going to be getting a monthly salary. He sent officials from France who were supposed to run the whole settlement there. And that's another story which we will discuss maybe some other time. There was so much friction between those officials and the farmers, because the officials, most of them were traditional. Some of them were not even from, even anti-from. While all the farmers were from Haredi Yidden, and it caused lots of frictions and misunderstandings. The officials were running the settlement, everything was going well, the vineyards were growing properly. When Baron Rothschild came to visit Eretz Yisrael a year later in 1886, he was so astounded by how things have developed and grown, he asked to change the name of the settlement as a memorial for his mother who passed away recently, and the name was changed, pardon me, to Mazkeret Batya. Now, I don't know if anyone of you know Mazkeret Batya. If you've been there, Mazkeret Batya is very near Rehovot. It's down south. A beautiful, very, very, very peaceful settlement. And Batya was the name of Baron Rothschild. The settlement's name was changed. The big story happened in 1888. 1888 was Erev Shnat HaShmita. 1889 was the Shmita year. The farmers, who were all Haredi farmers, came to the Baron Rothschild's officials, the French officials, and said to them, listen, next year's Shemitah year, we're not planning to do anything in the vineyards. We're not planning to do absolutely nothing. We're not going to take care of the land. We are going to do what the Torah says, v'shavta ha'aretz. We are going to let the land rest. Now, the officials started getting very under pressure, because if you don't take care of the vines for a whole year, anyone who ever dealt with growing grapes, and whoever dealt with vines knows that a vine is a very, very weak tree. If you don't take care of it constantly, the vines will die. If the vines will die, in other words, all the investment Baron Rothschild invested in Mazkeret Batya, everything will be thrown to the trash. Which means that the farmers will not get the support of Baron Rothschild, and we need to remember what Israel was in 1888. We're talking here about a problem also of Pikuach Nefesh. Because in that time, it wasn't like today where everything was developed and you had aid from the government. In that time, if you didn't have work and you weren't managing to cope, you simply died of starvation. So there was a whole big shaila of what's going to happen now. Because if the farmers are not going to work for a whole year, the settlement is going to collapse. Baron Rothschild is going to pull back. He's going to stop investing funds in the settlement. Baron Rothschild wanted to know, is there a solution that his farmers can still work the land? They can still do agricultural work within the vineyards, even though it's going to be Shmita year. And he addressed the Shaila to, at that time, the rabbi of Yafo, whose name was Rabbi Naftali Herz. Now, why the rabbi of Yafo? Because at that time, the chief rabbi of Yafo was also the rabbi of all the settlements in Eretz Yisrael. Now, the settlements were then mostly based down south. Today they're known as the cities of Rishon LeZion, Nes Tziona, Gdera. Today they're really big cities, and that time they were small farming settlements. He addressed the Shaila to him. It was his job. He was the rob of the settlements. Let him cope with it. Now, even in that time, dealing with a Shemitah was a hot potato, which no one really wanted to deal with. Rabbi Naftali Herz, now this gets interesting now, he didn't want to deal with the Shaila itself. He addressed the Shaila to the chief rabbi then of Jerusalem, Rav Shmuel Salant. Reb Shmuel Salant didn't want to deal with a shayla either, because at that time the rabbi of the Eda Charedis in Yerushalayim was the Maharil Diskin. Reb Yerucha blamed Diskin, who was the chief rabbi of Brisk before he came to Eretz Yisrael. He was a very strong and sharp man, very fierce, and Reb Shmuel Salant didn't want to get into any friction with him. So what did Reb Shmuel Salant do? Reb Shmuel Salant himself, he moved the shayla on to the chief Sfaradi rabbi then of Eretz Yisrael, the Rishon LeZion, Rabbi Raphael Meir Penigel. He said this, and I don't want to deal with it, this is going to cause some Ashkenazi friction within the Ashkenazi world of Jerusalem. Let's address it to the Sfaradi rabbi. The chief Sfaradi rabbi, Rabbi Raphael Meir Penigel, didn't want to deal with the Shaila that much either, since he was holding an official position as the Rishon LeZion, the chief Sfaradi rabbi, and it could cause lots of problems in Eretz Yisrael. And he moved the Shaila on to his brother-in-law, Rabbi Yaakov Shaul Eliashar, who later, after when Rabbi Meir and Raphael Meir Penigel passed away, Rabbi Eliashar, he became the next Rishon LeZion in Eretz Yisrael. Now, Rabbi Yaakov Shaul Eliashar didn't pass it on to anyone, don't worry, here it stops. He sat and he wrote a very long tshuva, which appears in his book, Shut Simcha Leish. Leish are the initials of his name, Aleph Yud Shin, Eliashar Yaakov Shaul. And he wrote a long tshuva, and where he actually spoke about the fact that you can do a Heter Mechira selling the lands for 1 year to a goy, and he based his psak on a psak that was given in around the area of 1700 by a big Sfaradi prominent rabbi known as Rabbi Mordechai Rubio, who wrote a book called Sror Hamor, and Rabbi Mordechai Rubio was the chief rabbi of Hebron in 1700, and he wrote a tshuva already then allowing to sell the land to a goy for 1 year during the Shemitah year, and being able to do agricultural work during the Shemitah year in your lands, solving the problem. So Baron Rothschild was very happy. He had a tshuva written by Rabbi Yaakov Shaul Eliashar. And after Rabbi Yaakov Shaul Eliashar wrote the tshuva, his brother-in-law, the Rishon LeZion, then Rabbi Raphael Meir Penigel, also signed. And he came to the farmers and he said to them, here, we have a psak halacha written by Rabbi Yaakov Shaul Eliashar, Rabbi Raphael Meir Penigel. You're allowed to continue working the land, of course, under certain stipulations, which we'll talk about in the next lesson. What's the problem? Everything's fine. Keep working in the vineyards. Came the farmers to him and said, no, we have a problem. You see, we are all Ashkenazi. And the rabbis who wrote the Psak Halacha were all Sfaradi. We would like to know what the Ashkenazi rabbis hold on this Shaila. You see, don't think we're not talking, nothing is new. Rabbi Yisai, Shlomo HaMelech says, En kol chadash tachat ha-shamesh. Under the sun there's nothing new. What was and what will be, the Ramban says, Maaseh Avot, the Tanchuma says in the Parshas Lech Lecha in Siman Tet, that everything that happened to our forefathers, Maaseh Avot Siman Lebanim, everything that happened to our forefathers is going to happen to us. So these are old stories, we're just repeating them again and again, we're reliving history. Okay, letters were sent by the settlers of Maskeret Batya to all prominent Ashkenazi rabbis in Eretz Yisrael and abroad. Now it gets interesting. Quite a few rabbis wrote tshuvas where they agreed with the psak halacha given by the Sfaradi rabbis, and they agreed that you're allowed to sell the land for 1 year to a goy, and in that time you can work the land even though it's Shemitah year. Who were the rabbis that said that you are allowed to? One of them was named Rabbi Israel Yoshua Tronk. Rabbi Israel Yoshua Tronk was the chief rabbi of Kotmaden. He was considered one of the biggest geoinim of Poland. About the Yeshuot Molcho, he wrote a shoot. We're going to read something that he wrote, something which is a bit scary, but he wrote it. I'm just going to be quoting him. So the Yeshuot Molcho gave a tshuva that he also agrees you're allowed to sell the land to a goy. Reb Shmuel Mohaliver, also from Bialystok, wrote a tshuva, you're allowed to sell the land to a goy. Reb Shmuel Zanvil Klepfish, who was at that time the Poisek of Warsaw, also wrote a tshuva, you're allowed to sell the land to a goy. And the greatest one of them all was Reb Yitzchak Elchanan Spektor, the chief rabbi of Kovna. The Beis Yitzchak, at that time, Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan Spektor, in his time, is like saying Rav Ovadia Yosef in our time. He was considered to be one of the, if not the, spiritual leader of all of Europe. And all of them wrote a tshuva saying that you are allowed to sell the land, Heter Mechira is permitted. Okay, but that's only some of that.
2 years?
What?
Didn't he say, Rav Chanan said 2 years ago?
We're going to speak soon about it. Okay. The difference between the way Ashkenazim Paskin and the Sfaradi, because Ashkenazim all gave stipulations to their Heter. A lot of Ashkenazi rabbis, on the other hand, wrote other tshuvas where they said, under no circumstances are you allowed to sell the land to a goy on Shemitah. even if Maskeret Batya will collapse, even if Baron Rothschild will pull back all his funds and stop supporting the settlement, it makes no difference whatsoever. Who were those rabbis? The Maharil Diskin, who Shmuel Sanat was a bit afraid of him, the Maharil Diskin then, who was the chief rabbi, who was the rabbi of the Eidah Haveris in Yerushalayim, Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, the father of the Soloveitchik dynasty, Baal Beis Halevi, the chief rabbi of Brisk, wrote a tshuva saying, you can't sell the land to a goy. The Natsiv of Volozhin, Rabbi Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, the last Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhin, who wrote the book Hamek Shelah Hamek Davar, he also wrote a tshuva, you're not allowed to sell the land to a goy. Rabbi David Friedman of Kalin also wrote a tshuva, you can't sell the land to a goy. In other words, notice, this is, people have tried over the years to say the Machlokes of Heta Mechira is a Machlokes between Rav Kook and the Haredi rabbis. And if you sponsor Heta Mechira, you're not Haredi. And if you're Haredi, you're not allowed to sponsor Heta Mechira. Well, I'm sorry to say that, but that's absolute nonsense. Because first of all, the Shaila didn't even start from the time of Rav Kook. Rav Kook, when he's going to get into the story, is 1910. The story, the Shaila started in 1888, which means 22 years before Rav Kook was even getting into the Shaila. The Shaila was diverted to Rav Naftali Hertz. It wasn't sent to Rav Kook. And the machloikas between the rabbis is not a machloikas between one rabbi and 2,000 rabbis. It was an equal, even machloikas between great rabbis from all aspects of Yiddishkeit. Chassidim, Haredim, everyone wrote a tshuva, and rabbis from both sides, each one of them gave his psika, and many said you can trust the Heta Mechira, and many said you can't. What happened in later generations? In approximately the area of 1910, when Rav Kook became the chief rabbi of Israel, at that time, again, under mandatory Britain, since Rav Kook was now in a position as the chief rabbi of Israel, Rav Kook dictated that from now on the Rabbanut HaRashit of Eretz Yisrael is going to be the one who's going to be in charge of the Heta Mechira, since he also sponsored the Heta Mechira, and it's all going to be done through the Rabbanut HaRashit Yisrael. Now, even in his time, the Ritbaz, who was the chief rabbi of Tzfat, one of the interpreters of the Yerushalmi, wrote a tshuva that you are not allowed to trust Heta Mechira. The Chazon Ish, now we're already going another 30 years back, we're talking now 1935, 1940, the Chazon Ish said, absolutely not, you can't trust the Heta Mechira. Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank, who was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim in that time, wrote a tshuva saying that you are allowed to trust the Heta Mechira, and more so, says Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank in his tshuva, he writes it in his shut, he has a shut called Hatzvi, he said that even Rav Diskin himself, the Maharil Diskin, who in 1888 wrote a tshuva that you're not allowed to trust the Heta Mechira, Maharil Diskin changed his mind, and in Tafrei Shinun Hei, in 1895, before the next Shemitah year, Maharil Diskin wrote a tshuva and he said, you are allowed to trust the Heta Mechira, although he stipulated it for 1 year. Why? Why did Maharil Diskin change his mind? In that time, over 90% of the farmers in Eretz Yisrael were non-firm Jews. They couldn't care less what the rabbis have got to say about Shemitah or not. That's interesting. They're going to continue plowing, sowing, and harvesting their lands, whether you say it's permitted or not. They're going to continue selling their produce in the markets, whether you say it's permitted or not. Now, what does that mean? That means that 90% of the fruit that we had in the markets in those times in 1895 was fruit that came from people who were not preserving the Shemitah, who did certain prohibitions in their land during the year, and we have now a problem with the fruit. The Maharil Diskin realized that this is already becoming, the situation is becoming a serious mess, and he decided, well, let's at least make it organized, and even those who don't trust, even though non-frum farmers, let's give them an option to keep Shemitah by doing a Heta Mechira, allowing them to continue doing everything regularly and not lose money. So even Maharil Diskin, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, writes in 1895, he agreed to change his mind to trust the Heta Mechira. Now, he stipulated it for 1 year. Though, if we look at the situation today, not much has changed. What's the percentage today of farmers in Eretz Yisrael who are not from? Who knows? Take a guess. 95. The assumption is somewhere between 70-80%. The realize why it's only 70% is because many of the kibbutzim, of the non-firm kibbutzim, who were not succeeding financially, eventually left the agricultural field and they moved on to different things like high-tech and industry. Today, the main kibbutzim who still deal with agricultural produce are the frum kibbutzim, like Alumim, Sar, Chofetz Chaim, Shluchot. So there's a larger percentage today. What? Shalabim. So there's a larger percentage today of frum farmers. But it's still, we're talking about 70-30. We're still talking about 70% of the farmers who are non-frum, who do not care less what the Rabbanut has got to say or what the Halacha has got to say about Shemitah year. They're going to continue working their lands, they're going to continue selling their produce, So the Hetzer of the Ma'aril Diskin in 1895 is still relevant to today, to 2014. So I'm just making that as a comment. But notice this machloikis. This is a machloikis, an even argument between Rabbonim from all spectrums of Yiddishkeit. This is not a machloikis, like some people try to say, between Rav Kook and the Tzibur Datilumi, and between the Chazon Ish and the Haredi public. It has got nothing to do with being Datilumi and being Haredi. It has got nothing to do with the Chazon Ish and with Rav Kook. The Rav Kook and the Chazon Ish, they only came into the game much later on. The argument started earlier, 25 years earlier, when they weren't even playing on the field. Okay? Now, I'd like to read you something that the Yeshuot Molcho, Rabbi Yisrael Yoshua Tronk, an Ashkenazi rabbi from the city of Kotna, one of the greatest rabbonim of his time, he writes a very scary tshuva. Now, I'm going to read the tshuva and I'm just going to translate it. These are his words, these are not my words. Okay? Rabbi Yisrael Yoshua Tronk, the Yeshuot Molcho. He writes it in Yoredea Siman on Gimel. Achal Drishat Shlomo Atov, saying hello. Bitvar HaShmita, let's speak about Shmita. Tameani. I must say, I'm a bit baffled. I don't understand all those people that say you can't sell the land to a goy. Halo limkor karka, tell pashut, selling the land to a goy is a very simple thing. V'chol Yisrael adarim b'chul nogim, every Jew who lives in Chutz Laaretz does that. And he gives now three examples, where do we sell our stuff to goyim? Hen linyan mechirat b'chorim, we know that according to the Torah, if you have an animal, and that animal is now having its firstborn, the firstborn has got to go to the Kohen. What do you do to solve the problem? You sell the animal while she's pregnant to a goy, or at least have a partnership with a goy. The Torah says only if the animal belongs completely to you, do you have to give the firstborn to the Kohen. If there is a partnership with a goy, or it belongs completely to a goy, you don't have to give the firstborn to a Kohen. That's what every single Jew did in Chutz Laaretz, who had farm animals. He used to sell the pregnant behemah, who was pregnant with her firstborn, to a goy, in order not to give the firstborn to a Kohen, because giving the firstborn to a Kohen is a large financial loss. So says the Yeshuot Molcho, everyone sells their bechor to a Kohen, the behemah. And he gives another example. V'hen l'inyan mechirat chametz bePesach, we spoke about it last year. All the Yidden sell their chometz to goyim on Pesach. V'hen ha-Yehudim asher lahem kfarim v'sadot b'shabbatot ha-shana. Jews at that time who owned a lot of fields, or who owned farms, Jews who were very prominent, very rich, and had a lot of land, and they wanted the land to keep working on Shabbos. What did they do? They made a partnership agreement with a goy, who the land belongs as if to the goy on the Shabbos, and therefore their farms, their warehouses, can continue working even on Shabbat itself. Now, notice, all these three things are Yisuri Doraisa. Giving the Bechor to a coin is a mitzvah from the Torah. Chometz, not allowing to have chometz on Pesach, is a mitzvah from the Torah. Preserving the Shabbos is a mitzvah from the Torah. Says the Yeshuot Molcho, and these three things that are mitzvahs from the Torah, all Jews trust on selling things to a goy. So when we suddenly come to Shvis, which is Drabonon, suddenly, oh no, you can't sell it to a goy anymore. He says, I don't understand what's going on. And then now this is his sentence, this is not mine. Bifrat ki gdolei rabbanei Sfarad, especially because the great Rabbonim of the Bnei Sfarad, the Sfarim, asher tzipornam ava mikreisam shel chachmei Ashkenaz, who their nails are wider than the bellies of the Rabbonim of the Ashkenazim, he's actually saying that they are much greater Talmidei Chachomim, these are his words, hem matirim sheyavdu hanochrim bashvit al yedei mechira. That one's well out. How can you even argue with Rabbi Yaakov Shaul El Yashar and with Rabbi Rafael Meir Penigel, who are much greater than all the Ashkenazi rabbis? I didn't say this, he said this. And then he goes on and says another sentence. V'emet hi ki al yedei pachzutam shel ha-Ashkenazim, because the Ashkenazim are so rash and they're not careful about the way they pass them, they pass them too quick without thinking that much about what they're saying, yatza machshela gdola. There'll be a great damage halachic will be caused. Why? Ki avdu Yisrael be'atzmam etzdotehem. Because if you don't give the non-farm farmers an option to preserve their lands on the year of Shemitah, they're going to continue working the lands, but Yisrael, they're just not going to listen to what you're saying. So you have to find a solution. These are not my words. Yeshuot Molcho, Yoredea, Siman, Gimel. You can search it. It appears anyone who has Project Ashut. Appears on Project Ashut. Those are his words. And he's an Ashkenazi rabbi, okay, for those of you who doubt it. So we're seeing that this argument was a big argument, and it already went onto what's called a personal basis. even in that time, this has got nothing to do with Rav Kook and the Chazon Ish. This is many years before Rav Kook and the Chazon Ish. Remember, this is already 1888. What happened in later generations? Rav Shlomo Zalman Oibach wrote a whole book discussing Heter Mechira. And he paskened, you're allowed to do Heter Mechira. He paskened 15 years ago when the chief rabbis were Rav Eliyahu Bakshi Doron Shlita and Rav Yisrael Meir Lau Shlita. Rav Shlomo Zalman Oibach Zecher Tzadik Livracha paskened that they need to do Heter Mechira through the Rabbanut HaRashit Yisrael. He was their halachic basis, and that's why they did the Heter Mechira. On the other hand, Rav Yoshiv Zecher Tzadik Livracha held, you're not allowed to do Heter Mechira whatsoever. So again, we can see the machlokes. Now notice, Shlomo Zalman Oibach, okay, for those of who want to say that it's a Dati Lumi and a Haredi argument, Shlomo Zalman Oibach was a Haredi Yerushalmi rabbi. Rav Yoshiv was a Haredi Yerushalmi rabbi. So this is a machlokes that has got nothing to do with politics. This is a halachic machlokes. Now, even though there is a big difference between the heter of the Sfarim and Ashkenazim, what a difference. All the Ashkenazim who wrote a heter gave certain stipulations to the heter. Some of them said the heter is only limited to a year or to 2 years. Some of them said the heter is only limited in certain conditions if the Jews do not do A, B, C on their lands. There are all these different stipulations the Ashkenazi rabbis gave. The Sfari rabbis, on the other hand, gave no stipulations whatsoever. They wrote, since Shemit is drabonon, and we trust Heter Mechira, selling stuff to a goy, even on things that are right, so without giving any stipulations, we give three examples. Selling the pregnant behemoth with its firstborn to the goy, selling chometz to a goy, and selling the lands to a goy so they can continue, so I can continue using them on Shabbos. No stipulation whatsoever. You're allowed to sell the land to a goy. And when Mashiach comes, and most of Am Yisrael are living here in Eretz Yisrael, Bezos Hashem, that already happened this Shemitah, then when it becomes Doraisa, then we'll have a redis. Then we won't have to worry at all. Why? Because then there's going to be the bracha of Itziviti Lachemet Birchati. Then all the nations, what they're going to do is, they're going to be helping Am Yisrael be the light to the goyim. All the nations are going to be helping us. We're not going to have any financial problems, so we can let the land on the Shemitah be completely barren, not doing anything on the land, no problem. The Sfari rabbis did not give any stipulations. Now, in the last generations, Rav Avadia Yosef Zecher Tzadik Livracha, he wrote a lot of tshuvas on Shemitah, a big contrast. It appears in his Shu'ti Abiya Omer, in the 10th part, Chelek Yud, Yoredea, Simanim Lamed Zayin, 37-43. Massive, massive tshuvas discussing the whole aspect of Heter Mechira. And Rav Avadia Yosef, how does he pass them? He comes to a conclusion like this. He says, listen, the Heter Mechira is a very solid and sound heter, based on holy Rabbonim, who wrote incredible tshuvas explaining why you're allowed to sell the land to a goy. Nevertheless, says Rav Avadia, even though the Heter Mechira is a completely valid heter, and anyone who wants to buy Heter Mechira can buy Heter Mechira. Nevertheless, he says, it is my recommendation if you want to be machmir, if you're Ben Torah, Lekatchila, do not buy Heter Mechira if you can. Buy Yevul Nochri. We're going to be speaking about that in the next lessons. What Yevul Nochri? Where does it come from? Does it come from Gaza, from the behemoths living in Gaza? Or does it come from the behemoths living in Europe? It all depends. No, and I'm saying this. Why am I saying this? Because once upon a time, Mordechai Eliyahu wrote, there's a difference between the goyim living in Gaza and the goyim living in Europe. Because the goyim living in Gaza were against us. The goyim living in Gaza take the money that we give them, use it to sell, to build bombs, use it to dig tunnels, trying to buy mountains and mountains of weapons to slaughter Yidden, while the Jews living in Europe don't do that. Today, reality has changed, because in Europe, the anti-Semitic parties are growing. Many places in Europe, anti-Semitic parties are getting places on the parliament. They're speaking openly about anti-Semitism. Okay, they're anti-Yidden, they're anti-Israel. So the question is, do you think that there's a party called Yubik, I think, or Yubak, I don't know what its name is. Are they different than the Hamas living in Gaza? The difference is that Yubak are in Europe, and Hamas are in Gaza, so Hamas find it easier to throw bombs at us. And if Yubak were here, wouldn't they be doing the same thing? I don't know. It's a question we'll have to discuss in the next shiurim. But from our point of view, those are all murderers who want to kill us Jews. So the question is there a difference? Nevertheless, Rav Avadia Yosef says, Lekatchila, if you can, don't trust Heter Mechira. Rav Avadia Yosef wrote in 1986. He wrote a letter to the residents of the Haredi Haredi quarter in Ashkelon, and they asked him, "What are we supposed to do about the Shemitah?" And he says like this. He says, "Your Ben Torah, if you have the financial ability, if you have the practical ability, which means if you have both the money, the time, and it's also accessible to you because you live in a town where there is a shop selling stuff with a kashrus of, let's say, badatze da chavedis, then you should go get it. But if you're lacking one of those things, for example, if you don't have the money, and the price difference is vast, if you don't have the time, and if you don't have the accessibility, for example, I had a shayla of someone who lives in Rishon LeZion. In two quarters where he lives, there's no shop that sells anything but Heter Mechira. For him to go buy Heter Mechira, he's got to travel every single week to Bat Yam, which is 35 minutes, which is 39 minutes each direction, to buy their fruit and vegetables. Hmm. Now, that's also a shayla. Says Rav Moshe, says Rav Avadia Yosef, if you don't have the time, the money, or the accessibility, you can buy Heter Mechira. Now, with Rav Avadia Yosef, we're getting a bit, things get a bit more complicated. Why? Because there are videos that were published this year and last year showing where Rav Avadia Yosef is speaking to Rav Yosef Chaim Sitruk Shlita, who used to be the chief rabbi of France. Now, the reason he's not the chief rabbi of France anymore is because in France, the term of the chief rabbis is limited by time. So he was, I think, 10 or 15 or 20 years the chief rabbi, and then eventually he had to retire, just like Yenu Eretz Yisrael, and there were new elections. At that time, when he came to Rav Avadia Yosef, he was serving as a chief rabbi of France. And he asked him, is Heter Mechira lekatchila? And Rav Avadia Yosef says on the video, Heter Mechira is lekatchila lekatchila. So many people said, here, Rav Avadia Yosef, even though he wrote in his books that lekatchila, if you can, try and buy something that's not Heter Mechira, he changed his mind, as it says in the video. In my opinion, it's a debate. In my opinion, you can't learn from things that go on in a video than things that the Rav wrote specifically in his books. Because the rabbi that writes things in his books knows those things are going to stay forever. When a Rav speaks, maybe the answer he gave Rav Yosef Chaim Sitruk was only an answer to those people living in France. And we know that the French community is mostly traditional. It's not Haredi. Maybe the answer was only meant for the French Jewry and not for anyone else. Since there's so many shailas, in my opinion, you cannot contradict what a rabbi writes from a video that you see the rabbi in. Now, what's the conclusion of this shia? The argument about Heter Mechira started years and years ago in 1888 in the settlement of Maskeret Bat Ya. It had nothing to do with Rav Kook and the Chazon Ish. Rav Kook and the Chazon Ish joined the argument much later on. It was an argument between rabbonim from all spectrums of Yiddishkeit in that time, Haredi, Dati Lumi, Hasidim. It was a halachic argument and not a political argument. Until today, it is still a halachic argument and not a political argument. Those who want to trust the Heter Mechira, there are many choshuv and important rabbonim who say you're allowed to buy Heter Mechira. Should a Ben Torah lekatchila buy Heter Mechira? The answer is no. A Ben Torah should try lekatchila not to buy Heter Mechira. But that is only if he has the financial ability not to buy Heter Mechira, only if he has the time, and only if those things are accessible to him. If he lives in a settlement where only Makolet sells Heter Mechira, no one's going to be expecting him to go and take a trip to somewhere else and buy Yevul Nochri if he can get Heter Mechira. Now, this was the second shiur on Heter Mechira. Next shiur, we're going to be speaking about all the halachic stipulations of those who do trust Heter Mechira. A shiur after that, we're going to be speaking about Oitzah Beis Din. And the last shiur, the fifth and last shiur, we're going to be giving a conclusion of the whole sugya, and summarizing what do the poskim say today that you should do or you shouldn't do, and what do we recommend in yeshiva. Until next week, Be'ezras Hashem, have a wonderful week. Lots of atzlacha.
Thank you very much.